It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And we're really pleased to bring our next guest to the microphone. Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse joins us now here on Morning Drive. Jerry, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning, man. We appreciate it.
Good morning, fellas. Thank you for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So Jerry, we've talked a lot here on the show about how your team has continually shown improvement throughout this year as the SEC schedule has progressed. What's it been like from your vantage point to watch your young guys continue to improve as they've come down the stretch here?
Well, man, it really started back in the spring. You know, I just think we're starting to build kind of a way to play, a way to approach, you know, daily improvement and the player development side of it. Coaches do a really good job, man, and it's a process, and to watch them learn how to, you know, share the floor with each other and get better, you know, day to day, and come out and compete the way they compete. And I think that's the most important thing, is competing. That we learn how to the compete level that's necessary to be able to win in the SEC. And I think we're starting to understand that and see that a lot better than we did early on.
Obviously, a lot of adversity for this team, Jerry. You lose Aaron Nesmith and Cleavon Brown. Jordan Wright missed a game that you won. You've had several walk-ons in there. But Saban Lee, to me, has become SEC all-first team caliber guy for you. Just had 38 at Alabama, has had a lot of big-time performances. I remember you talking before the year about sort of how he needs to not be faster than the play at times. You know, he can get by anyone whenever he wants. It seems like he's really picked up some of the nuances of maybe changes, speeds, and patience and setting people up. What specifically has gotten better for him from the time you started working with him to now?
And I think it's really going to continue to improve, man. But I think he's just, the game is slowing down for him a little bit. And I think everything for all these guys, it's another level of strength that they're coming into, especially our younger guys that's coming right from high school. But I think even for Saban, it's always been about, I just have to do it as fast as I can or as hard as I can. And I think when he starts to mix up his gears a little bit, and I think really starting to see plays develop and see how not only he can make plays early on. That's what, for him, is the key part, is getting his teammates involved early. If he can find a way to get them involved early, then that's going to open up things for him later on. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter if he doesn't have a big first half. Some of the better games that we've had and all year, he may not have gotten off to the quickest start, but he still was able to find it in the second half or something once he got his teammates involved. So that's why I kind of challenged him to see if he could lead the league in assists, because I saw that type of ability from him, you know, to make other guys better, because he's going to cause so much attention. And to watch that happen and develop, and it's been with some growing pains, believe me. You know what I'm saying? He's been the target of some mean film sessions, but over the course of the year, man, he's taking constructive criticism. He's gotten better. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing I can say about Saban, is you can coach him. You know what I'm saying? I think he wants to be coached. He wants to be great. And so it's been a pleasure to watch that. I mean, he and Scotty both, because, I mean, obviously I'm a little harder on the point guards because they t- supposed to know where everybody else is supposed to be, and these guys haven't had a lot of rep of doing that at this level. You know, they've been pretty good, you know, in high school, but again, it's mostly relying on athleticism. Now you got to rely on using your smarts and your poise and your brain, and I think they're combining the two, and it's pretty evident of what's happening to our team as they've gotten better and grown.
Jerry, what's been the biggest thing you've learned about yourself as a coach this year as you've gone through this process now in the SEC?
I just think for me, man, this is about being consistent every day. You know, I didn't come in, and obviously I had a lot bigger, you know, hopes for our team, you know, when I saw it constructed and I looked at the pieces that we had coming into the start of the season from back in.
Jerick?
I think we may have lost him there.
Yep, may have lost him.
We'll work on that.
We'll try to get him back.
Try to get Jerry Stackhouse back.
Interesting, you know, mean film sessions with Saban Lee. I think it's pretty clear from the start, you know, Jerry Stackhouse, pretty frank talker. You know,
yeah.
Not like a yeller screamer, but pretty
honest.
Yeah, you know, comes out and very, very specific and challenging in what he wants from his guys. So, I mean, look, Saban Lee was a really talented player in 2 years, but he's becoming a great player now.
No question.
We got Jerry back.
And we've got Jerry back on the line now. Sorry about that, Jerry. I was just asking what you learned in your first year.
I was hitting a little volume button on the phone. I cut it down. Sorry about that. But no, I was just like, man, I think these guys, just watching them get better, you know, from the summer. Like, I had a different outlook, you know, coming into the season when I had Aaron, you know, and like, you're like, man, this kid can really shoot the basketball. You know, Cleavon can space four out of five. You know, we had a different, real outlook of doing something special this year. And then Aaron gets out, Cleavon's out for the year. Now we had to switch gears. And then we had to switch gears at the beginning of the SEC season. Like I said, if this could have, you know, if their perfect world, this would, you know, we would have known this in the preseason. Then we had time to adjust, but we had to start adjusting and playing a different way and a different style in conference play. So that took us, we took our lumps right there at the beginning, had a couple bad losses because we were adjusting and a little bit of a hangover of like, oh, here we go again. Same thing happened last year. Garland went down. Now Aaron's down. Like, instead of kind of woe is me, we did have a little bit of woe is me for a couple of days, but it's like, man, we got to get over that. We got enough to still do something special, and I think those guys believed it, they trusted in their work, and here we are now with this, you know, as confident and playing as well as we've had all season.
And before we get into the Arkansas matchup, Jerry, which is really an attractive game Wednesday night, Bridgestone Arena, on that roster, do you are you expecting Cleavon Brown to be back for a fifth year? And then what about Aaron in particular, and then maybe Saban too, you know, giving a look to the NBA?
Man, you never know. Like I would hate to be presumptuous, you know, as far as, you know, Cleavon's concerned. I mean, I think he has an opportunity to petition to the conference for a fifth year. I mean, he's eligible for that. But, again, I think that's something that has to come down from the conference office. He's not, you know, still in the rehab process of, you know, getting back, but he's doing a lot better. As far as Aaron goes, I think a lot depends on his, you know, scan, the bone scan that he, you know, has to continue to show teams that he's healthy. And I think that's going to be, he shows that thing is healing and doing as the way it should. Then I think he's possibly close to a lottery pick or first round pick. And if that's not the case, then he could fall. And if he falls, I think it's a great opportunity, a great possibility that he comes back, because I think he should not settle for a second rounder. I mean, because he's first round talent. I think there's no doubt in my mind the track that he was on, he would have been player of the year in this conference. He was on an unbelievable tear, and so I think and Saban, you know, he's obviously had a big uptick. You know, since, you know, Aaron's been out, you know, has been able to showcase himself. And so there could be some opportunities. Haven't really seen him in any mock drafts, but I'm pretty sure if he would have a big tournament, which we're hoping that he will, that, you know, he could put his name could really come come to the tops of it. But it's, and that's a good thing, man. I think the thing about, I tell these guys all the time, man, it's not about getting to the league. It's about staying, you know, and I think that's the most important thing, that we try to prepare them and get as much of this information and stuff that I have to give and our coaches have to give, so that you can be there and have some longevity, stick around a little bit. But I'm going to be a resource for those guys regardless. I mean, they're my guys now, so no matter if they leave, they're still going to come back here and learn and understand how they can get better at the next level as well. That's the type of commitment that I have to every kid that I play for, that have played for me.
Arkansas's got a guy I think we'll see in the league in Mason Jones, who's just been on a tear. But then they get Isaiah Joe back, and I know they've still been up and down, but how dangerous is that duo for them, and what do you think about this matchup Wednesday night?
Well, I mean, I think it's a good matchup, man. Everything should be good at this point of the season. I mean, it's the SEC tournament. Team should be kind of who they are at this point. Should be playing, hopefully playing their best basketball. I think we're playing our best basketball. We're not the same team that played them earlier in the year. We're not, you know, just not the same team that we were in the early in the year, and I'm pretty sure they're not either. So, I mean, it's just about, we know that they have talented players, and we have talented players, and it's now just about who's going out and competing and who wants it. It's like, you know, we know what they're going to run. They know probably what we're going to run. But I think it's just about, like, who's going to compete, man? Who's going to be the tougher team? Who's going to rebound the basketball? Who's going to come over and make the tough plays and help their teammates and cover for their teammates? That's what it comes down to, and I think that our guys are, you know, they're really confident, and I think they're ready to try to showcase what they know.
Got Vanderbilt men's basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse with us. Jerry, last thing, a lot of talk today, it seems like every day more and more, about the coronavirus. Obviously, I think Vanderbilt now is no in-person classes for the rest of the month. You know, you're seeing some sports events where they're talking about no fans. Do you have any indication of a change at all this week at the SEC tournament? And what kind of, you know, what kind of things have you guys discussed as a staff or even as a team about this?
Well, we actually, man, it's all kind of new. That news came down last night. To, you know, we got an email from administration letting us know that the classes were going to be canceled for the rest of the week and could possibly longer, possibly maybe even have some online stuff going on. Moving forward. But we got another briefing this morning with all of the head coaches to try to figure out, you know, a little more in depth of what's the next steps. But it's scary, man, because, I mean, but I think the country's a little bit scared right now, just because it's a lot of unknown. But I think I haven't heard anything from the tournament. I think everything's going to go on as usual, you know, business as usual from that standpoint. So we're going to prepare the same way. But again, as you know, obviously the kids was in study hall yesterday when they heard the news. So you can know, you can imagine how that went. Probably with my studying going on, everybody's trying to think about how can I get home. But I'm like, yo, we got a little business to take care of here. But again, it's a little bit of a distraction. But at the same time, I think everybody's best interest is trying to, you know, find what's the best for our students and our faculty and everybody, to make sure that everybody's safe. So, you know, we're at a pretty good place. You know, I think being here at Vanderbilt and have the hospital and the medical, you know, at our disposal, being able to get that information and how to best go about it is a plus for sure.
Vanderbilt men's basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Jerry, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and good luck this week in the SEC tournament.
Appreciate you, man. Go Doors.
Absolutely.
Thanks, sure.
Interesting stuff there. I am kind of fascinated how teams are going to handle this coronavirus stuff and just everything that comes with it. I mean, obviously, basketball, there's a lot of close hand-to-hand combat. There's sweat going on, a whole bunch of different things that you have to account for. So hopefully, you know, we can continue to try to, I guess, as you said earlier, slow this trend and reverse this trend. So it doesn't affect us even more than it already has.
It's just, again, if guys are elbowing each other, spitting on each other, sweating on each other, it's okay for them to high-five after the game.
Yeah, that's very true. When we come back, which SEC team do we think has the best chance to run the distance in the NCAA tournament? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Thanks to Vanderbilt men's basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse for joining us in the last segment. A big game tomorrow night for Vanderbilt against Arkansas. Tip off at 8 o'clock at Bridgestone Arena. Joe, doors on a winning streak, baby. Two games in a row. That's the longest in the conference, along with Texas A&M. So riding high on some momentum heading into the SEC tournament.
How about that, huh? Yeah, and I mean, really impressive. I mean, going to Alabama, that's a team that, well, it kind of has played itself off the bubble, but you could say Vanderbilt knocked it off the bubble with that win in Tuscaloosa, Marquise. I don't know. You tell me. I saw Saban
Lee. What happened in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah. Hey, you didn't catch that one? You missed that
which
one?
Which one? What are you talking
Saban
about?
Saban Lee, 38.
Denial's
Nick
a great
Saban?
Place to be.
Nick Saban. Nick Saban's playing basketball now? That's dope. Nick Saban's always been a good basketball player. He used to have this thing with Kirby Smart and the rest of his coaches. Yeah, he was pretty good.
Imagine that. Nick Saban Lee. You know, like he smashed two public figures together. Like, what if they had a kid or something, you know, like Nick Saban Lee? Saban Lee torched the Tide in Tuscaloosa. And I swear, 11-14 games are very rarely interesting in conference tournaments. It's usually just bad teams you don't want to watch. Like, I'm not just saying this because I have to go cover this game. I'm really looking forward to Arkansas-Vanderbilt. It's going to be a fun up-and-down game with teams that are very perimeter-oriented and can score in bunches. That's actually going to be a really fun game Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, Arkansas is healthy now. So they destroyed Tennessee a couple weeks ago. We've seen what their top level looks like. Going to be an interesting game tomorrow between Vanderbilt and Arkansas for sure. As you look at the SEC as a whole, I think we would all agree Kentucky, Florida, LSU, Auburn, all in the fold in terms of guaranteed to be in the NCAA tournament. We had Jimmy Dykes on yesterday. He would agree with that as well. When you look at those four teams, which team do you think has the best chance to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament? I think most people would probably say Kentucky, but I'll tell you this. If I see the Auburn team for the rest of this stretch that I saw against Tennessee this past Saturday, they're going to be a tough out for anybody.
Yeah, it's hard to trust LSU and Florida. They're both very talented teams. They're going to be in the field. You know, they're going to be probably, I mean, if you look at, you know, the bracket folks now, I mean, those they're right around middle of the bracket type. So, you know, if you're an 8-9 team like LSU is projected to be right now, you know, that means that you're, and actually both of them, that means you're going to look at a 1 seed if you win your first game against an evenly matched team. It's hard to pick a team like that to make a run. They could. I mean, this is certainly a year that 1 seeds losing to 8s or 9s will not shock anyone, but I would go with Kentucky if Ashton Hagans is back. And I haven't heard anything recently on that. I know John Calipari downplayed that. He missed the game for personal reasons.
There is a video out there.
A video out there of him in a car with like a massive stack of hundreds. Like, I mean, like, this is like in Goodfellas, they wouldn't have put a guy with this many hundreds. It would have looked ridiculous, you know? So, yeah, there's a lot of money in his hand there in that car. But apparently, you know, he's going to be back. I mean, he is one of the best defensive guards in the country. He has kind of taken a back seat to Emmanuel Quickley and Tyrese Maxey offensively. He's not as good as those guys. But defensively, he's the, you know, the tip of the spear there. Very important player. They don't have him. I'll go to Auburn because Auburn, like you said, hey, when they get it rolling, whoo, watch out. They've been all over the place, too. They just lost at home to A&M. I mean, like, it's hard, very hard to trust that team. But we saw it last year. They got rolling, and they kept rolling.
They did.
They really should have played for the title.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And do they have another run like that left in them this year? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say that with any confidence, I think, at this point. But we've seen when Bruce Pearl has that group rolling, they are pretty dangerous and pretty difficult to stop. I think the SEC as a whole this year, you probably don't feel great about anybody's chances to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. But then again, you look around the country. I mean, how many elite level teams are there? I mean, not many. And I think this year, I mean, the tournament every year is wide open in terms of what could happen. That's why it's so entertaining and so difficult to predict. this year, it just seems like it's going to be totally wide open, and there's not a whole lot of separations from your top teams to kind of your middle of the pack teams.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas right now looks to me like the best team. Yeah. Bill Self has a knack for bringing in talent, baby.
Yes, he does.
Not that Kansas would have trouble recruiting anyway, but Bill Self makes sure they get the players they need. He's
very thorough.
He's very, very good at it on all fronts. That looks like the best team clearly as the one. Look at the other one seeds. Baylor's kind of faded. If they're a one, I mean, Dayton, you know, Obi Toppin might be National Player
Big
of the
Flyers,
Year.
Baby.
Yeah, that's a great story. San Diego State or Gonzaga, these are like their 1-2 teams. Yeah. Creighton right now, are they a two? Okay. Kentucky's a two? Okay. No one's getting in these brackets if you're like a 7, 8 or whatever and feeling like they have no chance. So it is different. It is, and I don't know if this is, you know, a parity thing overall. It's just kind of a weird year in that way. Usually you have at least, you know, a top tier that you're like, okay, you want to avoid those teams. I would probably make it Kansas alone in that tier, and they're not as scary as a lot of these top teams in some years. So now we'll say all this, and it'll be like all one seeds in Atlanta.
Yeah, this will be the year it goes chalk. I mean, that's basically how it works in college basketball. The minute you think something's going to happen, it pretty much doesn't. Like, I picked Duke last year. I thought Duke would run away with it last year. Nothing. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Thanks to your boys.
I tell you. Watching that game with my 11-year-old, my goodness. He somewhat enjoyed that. That was a great game. And that was, you know, that was an interesting – that was a committee really screwed that up. They should not have – they should try to – even though they don't do a snake bracket – you should try to not put the top two with the top one,
yeah,
which is what they had. So everybody thought Michigan State got screwed. As it turns out, Duke got screwed by that. Although Duke, also last year, should have lost to UCF. And I forget who else. They had a couple really close calls. Certainly that UCF game. Man, Taco Fall, they had them.
Everybody feels really sorry for Duke.
Yes.
Yes.
Poor Duke. Duke's, you know, right now, if you're going with Joe Lunardi, he's got those Blue Devils in Greensboro as a 3 seed against the Belmont Bruins.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
And Rick Byrd almost got Duke a few years ago. If that happens, maybe Casey Alexander gets it. Duke would have a problem with Nick Mazinski. I'll tell you that right now.
Absolutely.
Not that there aren't some players Belmont would have trouble with. Vernon Carey. That would be a great – I'd love to see Carey Mazinski actually match up. Let's make that happen, committee.
Let's see if we can work on that. Joe, we had Jimmy Dykes on yesterday and said, don't quite count out the Vols yet in terms of an at-large bid. I think it's going to be really, really difficult in order for that to happen. What are your thoughts on the Vols' chances of having an at-large bid this weekend, and what would that look like? Like, what would they have to do in order to get that? Because I really don't see a path.
Yeah, I don't think that's correct. I'm trying, like, okay, let's go through. You got to beat Alabama, which all that does is get you to the next day. You would then get Kentucky. So if you could say, we beat Kentucky on the road and we beat Kentucky at a neutral site, well, I think that probably elevates you to somewhere in the fringe.
Yeah.
Okay. So then after that, you're looking at probably Mississippi State or Florida. You beat Florida at home. You know, if you beat Florida on a neutral site to get to Sunday, I mean, you certainly have greatly improved your resume. You'd get yourself close. But to me, if you look at the way the bubble looks right now, I think maybe if everything's chalk and there's no bid thieves out there, which you can never count on because there's always somebody that rises up in one of these leagues that takes away a bid and then someone else takes away another bid, maybe if everything went exactly as you needed everywhere else, you'd at least have a reason to watch the show Sunday night if you don't win. But I think it's pretty clear they're going to have to win this sucker, which means 4 wins in 4 days with, you know, a playing rotation that is not very deep. So it's a tall task. I have a hard time seeing them actually getting a bid.
When we come back, Chris Mason will join us. A big game tonight for the Nashville Predators in Montreal. We'll talk with him about that next. 102.5 The Game will be at Kroger at 1203 Murfreesboro Road in Franklin tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., collecting donations for the Second Harvest Food Bank. And customers can donate non-perishable items in-store and can donate to relief efforts at the checkout. Our communities are tough, and we will come out of this disaster stronger than ever. So if you want to help with that, we'll be at the Kroger tomorrow at 1203 Murfreesboro Road in Franklin. When we come back, Chris Mason will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Pleased to bring to the microphone our good friend, Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, driven by Freeland Chevrolet, also brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. C-Mace, what's going on, my man? How are you?
What's up, guys? Doing good. Just getting ready to head over to the Bell Center.
The great city of Montreal. I heard you can have a pretty good time in that city.
It's a great city, and I'll tell you what, the poutine here is phenomenal.
The poutine and the bag chucking.
That's right.
Elite.
Yes, yes. They go hand in hand.
Well, C-Mace, it's been two really incredible back-to-back performances from UC Soros, back-to-back shutouts against the Dallas Stars. Look, it's no secret, back in November, December, you looked at the numbers for Soros. They were not good. He was struggling. He has been so much better as of late. What have you noticed specifically in Soros' game that's led to this uptick in production where he's been one of the best goalies in the league over the course of the last month?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can just see when a goalie's on just how in control. They almost make the game look easy. He's just so efficient with his move, the way that he anticipates the play. It's like any sport. When you get in that zone, the game slows down for you. And I think since January 10th, I think he's best save percentage in the NHL, third in goals against. Like, he's just every single night he's giving these guys a chance. And at this point of the season, especially with the way the Preds season's gone and the situation that they're in, they need that type of goaltending, because it's all been a lot of one goal games. You saw the last two games against Dallas. It's gonna be a lot of special teams. And the way Soros has played, and the saves that he's making, the guys are doing, I think, a lot better job in front of him in terms of, the amount of the breakdowns. I think they've cleaned up that. There's not as many, but every game, no matter what, no matter how good you play, you're going to give up scoring chances. And when they've done that, Soros is there to make those saves. And you can just see his rebound control. He's not scrambling in there. And the guys are doing a good job clearing the rebound. So, combination of Soros playing at the top of his game and the guys cleaning it up a little bit defensively is a pretty good combination right now.
And of course, Chris, you got a back-to-back coming up, this huge one, at Columbus, at Minnesota. Back-to-backs actually next three weekends. I know, tough time out for Pekka Rinne in his last time. We expect to see mostly Soros here, but how do you think he will rebound, and how important is Pekka given that, a bunch of back-to-backs are coming up here?
Oh, I mean, that's the thing, is whatever goalie's in the net is the most important guy on your team, as far as I'm concerned. And Peck has had, it's been one of those years. I've had a year like he's going through right now, and it's tough to swallow. It seems like every time he gets in there, when those games, it's almost like everything that can go wrong does go wrong. He played those two incredible games, St. Louis and Chicago, and then he gets sick, misses a start probably. Assuming he would have got one or two in that week, misses one of that, and then he comes in for that game. And it was just one of those games again. But he's going to be very important going down, because any game that he's playing, those 2 points are just as valuable as any of the other ones. So they're definitely going to need both guys. And then, if they get into playoffs, you never know what happens within a series. So Peck is still a very, very important part of this team, no question.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us. And C-Mace, we spent the better part of a year in this market talking about the power play and the struggles that have gone along with it. Three games in a row, they've got goals on the power play. All three goals scored against the Stars were power play goals. What do you think's clicking right now with the power play units for the Preds?
I think that they're moving the puck. They're making a couple quick passes, and they're getting it on net. So I think before, I felt like they'd move around the perimeter too much, and they would wait for a perfect shot and just end up forcing it. Just easy to play against. Now I think they're just direct, couple quick passes. They're opening lanes, they're getting shots on net. When they get shots on net, that's when penalty killers have to work, because you have to come all the way back down to the net. And then in the power play, if you outwork the penalty kill, you hunt down those rebounds, and then you get the penalty kill running around. And I think the Predators are doing a much better job of just taking a direct approach of couple quick passes, puck to the net with traffic, couple quick passes, puck to the net with traffic, and it seems to be working. And then, other plays open up. They've made a couple of really nice seam plays. across the box through the middle of the ice. So, you know, confidence has a lot to do with that too. But I think for me, it's the direct approach that they're taking. They're not messing around. They're not trying to make the perfect play. They're just getting pucks to the net.
Chris, some of their best wins and probably best performances of late have come against division rivals, huge games, St. Louis, Dallas. And in both instances, we saw Jared Tenorti and some other guys, but Tenorti in particular, you know, kind of make his presence known in the face of Robert Bortuzzo, in the face of Corey Perry. Do you think that there's a link there between, you know, sort of standing up for teammates in those games and how they played? And then also, what do you think this has done for Tenorti's spot in that locker room?
Oh, man. Like, I've been blown away by, you know, the way that he's handled these situations, because I even said on the broadcast, he wasn't even here when both of those incidents happened, you know? And for him to just have the understanding that, you know, he's a big physical guy and he can have that kind of presence. You see how teams play differently. Dallas still play hard and they're a physical team, but it wasn't the same as you know, you'd normally see against Dallas. You know, Preds have, you know, a smaller team, not as physical on the back end as the Dallas forwards are. So it can be a mismatch a little bit. I think we saw that a little bit last year in the playoffs. But with him there, the dynamic changes. And I think teams have to take note of that. When you go to the net, you know, you don't just have, you know, Ryan Ellis or, you know, Roman Josi in your face. You got a big bruising guy who's willing to drop the mitts. He's an intimidating, you know, factor out there. And that really does play a difference in the way teams approach and play the Predators. And I think for the Predators, you know what it's like when you're going into a squabble and you have that the big tough friend with you. Well, you grow a couple inches too, right? So I think that that's the case with Tenorti. I think everyone can play a little tougher, and you know, he does make a difference. And you can see the way other players, they know when he's out there. They know when he's in front of the net. They don't take the same liberties when he's on the ice. And I think that's a huge advantage and something the Predators really needed.
Chris, last thing for you here. Obviously, playing against Montreal tonight, there's a very familiar face on the other side, your former teammate and your friend Shea Weber. Earlier this season, it was reported he might be out for the rest of the year. And then it was 4 to 6 weeks. And then in typical Shea Weber fashion, he's back like a week and a half later, because that's just what he does. What have you seen out of Shea's game this year, and a really cool pace that he's on? If he continues to stay healthy and play, 1,000 career NHL games could be on April 1st in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. So here's to hoping he's able to continue to stay healthy and play well.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's one of my best friends in the game. There's no question about that. And, you know, he's just one of those guys. He's a freak of nature physically. And, you know, honestly, we all, like Hal Gill and I, when we found out he was playing that next game or whatever, after they said he was pretty much done for the season, we just chuckled to each other, but weren't really surprised that he was back. But he's such a great player and leader, and he's found a way to adapt in this game. You know, he's not maybe the quickest defenseman, but he's still a very capable skater. He's a very good puck mover, and he's got the offensive side, you know, offensive skills to go with it. So for him to play, I really hope, that would be amazing if he could make the 1,000 games in Nashville, and it'd be special for him, and I think for the fans too. And the way Montreal season's gone, it's been a tough season with all the injuries that they've had. I think that'd be a really cool moment for Shane, his family, and for Preds fans as well.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason has been our guest here on Morning Drive. C. Mace, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Chris Mason, as always, brought to you by Freeland Chevrolet and Smoky Mountain Tops. Really cool. It's always fun to watch, you know, Shea Weber play. If you've been a Predators fan for any length of time, you know the impact that Shea had on the franchise here, on hockey in Nashville in general. I would probably still contend to this day that other than Pekka, he's probably the most important player in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one. I think that's an easy one, too. So who's three?
Well, that's a good question.
Maybe that's not easy, right?
It's not easy.
Do you go back? Do you go, you know, do you go back to the Vocoon? Early days?
Leguan?
Yeah, I was thinking Leguan.
Yeah, you know? I don't know if I'd put Leguan there. I know he's got, like, all the records, but, I mean, that'll happen when you're here for 15 years or however long he was.
Yeah, but that's also part of being
part
beloved,
of it,
right?
Yeah. I don't know. That's a really good question.
That'd be a good poll for people. Who's number three?
Fisher, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, Fisher would certainly have to be in that discussion.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, either way, it's going to be interesting to watch how the Predators respond tonight, because You heard C-Mace talk about it there. You feel good about the goaltending right now. The power play is clicking right now. But we've seen this year where things appear to be going well. You think you've got things figured out and are moving in the right direction, and then things just go off the rails, whether it's a game like Edmonton where they had several games throughout the season. They've lost twice to Anaheim. They've lost to the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, there have been games, the LA Kings they've lost to. I mean, there have been several games throughout the season where you point to and you say, I mean, that's probably a game and an effort that you'd like back there. To me, you can't really afford to have that tonight. With as tight as the race is in the Western Conference, you got to beat teams like Montreal that you should beat on paper.
Well, and, you know, Pierre LeBrun just actually ran a piece on how dangerous, you know, this compressed schedule is late in the year for players. And, I mean, the Preds certainly are no exception. They had a lot of games in hand on people. Here's a rare instance of 2 days of rest before a game. So jump on that and take advantage of 2 days of rest, because and then it's going to be day off game, game. You know, and those multi-day rests are going to be few and far between until the end. So you want to have spring in your step when you get them.
Yeah, I mean, luckily when they come back from this trip, you're going to have 3 days off in between your games. When you come back after Sunday's game against Minnesota, you got three days off before you play again after that. But you're right. I mean, this is going to be a grind this next stretch here. And I think not only physically it's tough to get through, I think mentally you have to make sure that your focus and just your sharpness is where it needs to be on a nightly basis. And they've struggled with that at times this year. To me, the situation is so big now, and every game is so crucial, that should not be something they struggle with at this point, at least in my opinion.
Oh, you're not wrong. Doesn't mean it'll happen, but you're not wrong.
Well, we'll continue this discussion on the other side of the break. A big game tonight for the Preds. Who needs to step up during this stretch here and get the job done for them as they close out the regular season in their playoff push? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Do have something I want to make you aware of. Very quickly, the Central Tennessee Tornadoes Home Cleanup Hotline. If you've had some tornado damage out there, we've got a number that you can call to make your case to help them come clean you up. As they're able, reputable and vetted relief agencies may assist you and your neighbors cut fallen trees, remove drywall, insulation, flooring, furniture, appliances, tarps, all of these different things. All these services are free, but service is not guaranteed due to the overwhelming need. So if that applies to you, if that's something that you've had to deal with over the course of the past week here, call this number, 800-451-1954. Again, that's 800-451-1954 for the Central Tennessee Tornadoes Home Cleanup Hotline. Joe, a big game tonight for the Nashville Predators against the Montreal Canadiens, launching an important week here on the road. And they've been very good on the road recently in terms of the success they've been able to have, played well and pretty consistently well on the road. Now is the perfect time to continue that trend, because they've got four important ones coming up this week. And this is a week, as we said yesterday, you know, the first three games of this trip are going to be against Eastern Conference teams. So a lot of times this time of year when you're scoreboard watching, you're looking at the standings that change on a nightly basis, you're worried about those three-point games, going to overtimes against teams that you're fighting with in the playoff race, maybe not gaining as many points as you can possibly gain. This week, just from your game standpoint of a Predators fan, you're not really worried about that. I mean, if you go to overtime tonight against Montreal and win the game in overtime, who cares if you're giving the Canadiens a point? That's something that sometimes you'll see both teams, especially like once you get into Toronto and Columbus later this week, when they're fighting for playoff spots as well. Sometimes when games are tied later in the third period, you see teams in this situation get a little bit more conservative. They don't want to make the big mistake that loses the game in regulation, and sometimes you'll see more games going into overtime at that point. This week, I think if you're the Predators, you'll take that all day.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, when we talk about game compression, you don't want to necessarily play 5 minutes of 3-on-3, but that's, you know, it's not a huge deal, so you're right. It's a little bit different approach when you're playing teams from the East. And you're right about them playing well on the road. I mean, they've been, I think, better, more reliable, it seems like, on the road for a lot of this season than at home. They just won at Dallas. They didn't play their best at Minnesota, you know, lost that game, but they recently had, you know, a big win at St. Louis to kind of start this. Well, I guess the Islanders win kind of started this sort of resurgence, you know, mid-February. But, you know, 1-1 in Chicago with Pekka Rinne really stealing that one. And again, they didn't play that well, but, yeah, here we go. They're on the road. By the time they get back to their building, it's possible they're playing in front of empty stands.
Yeah,
I mean, it's possible. I don't know. But this is just a massive week. You know, and you get the game off between Toronto, then another one, and you get that back-to-back on the road. It's the only one of these three. Well, no, they've got another back-to-back on the road with Arizona, Colorado at the end of the month. But huge week away from home while the SEC tournament happens here. So if you look at those four games, what do you need? You know, 6 points in the four games. Feel good about that? That'd be pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you where you don't want the three-point game, unless you're on the losing side of it, and that is Minnesota
on Sunday. Right.
Need to win that game in regulation. I mean, you've got two left, I think, against Minnesota.
Including the finale, last game.
Which could be that technically, I guess, could be a play-in game.
Could be.
For the playoffs at that point. You've got two against Minnesota. You got one against Winnipeg left. You got one against Arizona left. All of these teams that are right around you in the standings, those are the types of games you have to win. We mentioned earlier in the show, probably going to take a record of somewhere in the neighborhood of 8-4-2 down the stretch. I think if you go 8-4-2, you probably feel pretty good about your chances at that point. Not guaranteed, but pretty good about your chances. But it's not only the record that you have, it's also who you beat. Like if you're winning games against Minnesota, against Arizona, against Winnipeg, that goes a long way in helping you out in the standings as well.
Right, like if the twos are against those teams, that means they get points.
Yeah.
So that's where you need the regulation win. So eight, again, I'm trying to do math here. So that's 96. Is that what you said earlier?
That's 18 points. So what are they at right now? They're 76 right now, right? So that would be 94.
94. So there you go. My math again.
That's why we get into journalism. And we're told there'd be no math.
I know. And the thing is, like, we actually did the math earlier on the show, and I also forgot.
It's okay. We talk about a lot in 4 hours.
Yes, we do. And 94 points would be, you would think that would get you in. It would be close, but you would think that would get it done. So, I mean, here it is. You know, they're 17-4-4 at home, 17-12-4 on the road. They could be, if they're still in good shape by the end of the weekend, they're going to be a much better road record team than home record team.
Yeah, but I think right now, you'll take it any way you can get it. Doesn't matter at this point if you're the Predators. Got to start off with a win tonight against Montreal. Puck drop at 6 o'clock tonight at Bell Center in Montreal. Pregame, I believe, at 5 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, as we wrap up the show here quickly, we've discussed the coronavirus all morning long, what a prominent story that's been in the world of sports, but also the world in general. Really going to be interesting to continue to follow this as it goes about in the coming days, about how this could potentially impact fans going to games. We've already talked about the media side of things, not being in the locker room after NHL games, NBA games, MLS, and MLB as well. That, in the grand scheme of things, really not that big of a deal. That affects a small amount of people, relatively speaking. But I don't think we're that far away from the discussion being had of, okay, you know, we've got 18,000 fans in one central location. Is this really the smartest way to go about doing it? As, you know, the uncertainties and, unfortunately, what lately has been the spread of coronavirus still continues to swirl about.
Yeah, there's a lot more of it on the West Coast. And so, you know, the San Jose Sharks, essentially that county has, prohibited gatherings more than 1,000?
Yeah.
You know, so it's a different deal out there. But, you know, we've gone from 1 to 4 cases in Middle Tennessee in the last few days. I'll be surprised if anything changes with the SEC tournament this week at this point. But I think if the trend of the last couple days continues at about the same pace, I will not be surprised if a week from now we have heard that there will not be crowds at these NCAA tournament sites. And how weird would that be?
Yeah, just playing in an empty arena. That's happened. I think it's in the Champions League right now, Barcelona. I mean, you're not having fans in the stands there. They were talking about doing that for a while in Italy. Now they've just completely shut sports down in Italy. So it is going to be interesting to monitor. And I think the Sharks, as we mentioned, they're back home next week. I think the 17th is their next home game. So still a little bit of time, a week, before that would kick in terms of affecting the San Jose Sharks crowd. But it's probably difficult for me to imagine there being much more of a solution to that a week from now. You would think that they would probably still be in a similar situation in that county as they are right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's much more prevalent there than here right now. So it's hard to imagine that it would be like reversed or stopped to the point where they change their mind on that. It's just a question of how far does it spread? The D3 playoffs have also had a no fan thing, but of course, you know, it's a D3 playoffs. I mean, how many people were going to be there in the first place? Yeah. The NCAA tournament, that's a big, big deal.
That's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the Predators and their big game against the Montreal Canadiens. Looking forward to that. Joe, thanks for coming on today. Appreciate you.
Good job, man.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow from 6 to 10. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. That'll be what's coming on tap for you here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No.